Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 328th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for 28 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we're talking about the current state of democracy in Australia, reminding listeners that the demos in democracy means the people. You, we, I, you, us, all of us. And the crassy bit means rules or governs. So together, democracy means the people rule.
Yeah, or it's meant to.
Yeah. What's happening now, however, in front of our very eyes on a range of fronts is all supposedly a result, therefore, of the will and governance of the people. You, we, I, us, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Including the stuff we're witnessing through our various media, in official communications and speeches, and not to mention what's happening in our bank accounts and employment conditions, and in the clear-felled forests, and on the algae-destroyed beaches, and in our Defence Ministry's yearly billion-dollar payments for nuclear-powered submarines to keep us safe from China, but only sort of like from the mid-2040s onwards.
Yeah, and adding to that, most recently we've had the Australian government's really despicable rolling out the red carpet to Israel's President Isaac Herzog, president of a country defending charges of genocide before the International Court of Justice, a genocide which we've all seen live streamed on our phones.
Absolutely.
And supposedly welcoming Herzog on behalf of the Australian people.
Us.
Who have really exposed this as a lie with mass protests across the country. And I hope there's a little bit of embarrassment in Canberra. And the fig leaf of democracy has really been exposed with bans and restrictions on protest and police violence, particularly against protesters in New South Wales. Pretty disgraceful. With more than a little dark echo of US police clampdowns on protesters against immigration raids, where peaceful protesters have actually been shot. And of course, the non-democratic countries clamping down on protests like Iran, we condemn, and China, mind you. Mm-hmm. But here we are, US and Australia.
That's right, exactly. We've had several think tanks, Think Again programs, our programs over the years, in which we questioned Western nations even calling themselves democratic, including Australia's own two-party democracy and the overwhelming influence public media and therefore their owners play into what we called a lethal triangle.
Yeah, lethal triangle. The lethal triangle being, of course, two main parties propped up and promoted by our mainstream media, even while provision for two main parties is not even in our constitution. And I'm not sure if people generally realise that. It's not in our constitution. And each major party has a relatively meagre membership, used to be in the tens of thousands last time I looked, and it's losing primary votes every year. So now we see the coalition in a downward self-destroying spiral, maybe inevitably as it's torn apart between far-right, racist, climate-denying interests, and coal interests, I should add, and more moderate, relatively more moderate city dwellers, so who may be economically conservative, but really care about climate change and the planet. So anyway, I wonder where our mainstream media will go with this in the future.
Yeah, just watch Sky News. And in MAGA, make America great again, and Trump-obsessed US, critics seem to have almost run out of words, as that democratic system seems to devour itself or implode, with potential implications for the entire world, really.
Yeah, that's right, and the whole world watching and listening to every move.
The traditional two-party system in the US has seemingly going awry too, with the Democrats on one side also referred to as liberals, or even as radical left by those who have shoved a hypothetical political center so far to their own far right that potentially 80% of the US population could slip into a hypothetical left on certain issues or matters.
With the mainstreaming of the right, pretty right-wing positions are now presented as the centre, as I think you're suggesting.
That's right.
And things that we would call moderate or mainstream in Australia, like Medicare, now would be viewed as far left, if not communist.
That's right. Things like asking for the restoration of free lunches to kindergartens and primary schools in poor areas are now being viewed as left-wing in the United States. Mm. The Saturday Age last week included an article by Tony Wright, who is not their usual political commentator or columnist, but he is still one of the few remaining real journalists with historical wisdom. His article was titled, "Yes, Pauline Hanson is all smiles, but the question is, who will get the last laugh?" Its subtitle, or the subtitle of that article, referred to the coalition's recent split. And I quote that again, or as well, "A resurgent One Nation and a rattled leader's hissy fit set off yet another round of leadership jockeying. It is all very familiar." Tony Wright refers to several earlier Labour Party hissy fits in the late 90s and in the early noughties, leading to the 2004 election with Mark Latham, which Mark Latham spectacularly lost for Labour. And later in his diaries, Latham stated, and I quote, "The electorate has worked out the artificiality of it all. They can see through the spin doctors, the publicity stunts, the polling and the tricks of marginal seat campaigning. This is why people now talk about politics with a cool anger. They have a feeling that the system is far from genuine," end of quote.
Yes, and I guess that also quoting Mark Latham, of all people, that illustrates that people who are not always exemplary themselves are not necessarily excluded from speaking certain truths.
That is quite right. Latham then walked back into politics himself and via several scandals walked into One Nation till 2023, and after his own recent hissy fit, now being a New South Wales independent parliamentarian. Obviously, the Liberals have had their own hissy fits during the past decade. But not just staying with leadership schmozzles, what about the system itself? If it is all artificial, as Latham said, and if we, the electorate, are supposed to have it all worked out, as he said as well, we probably need a bit of help with what it is that we have worked out. So in the New Daily on February 4th, Amy Remakis warns, and I'll quote her, "Make no mistake, the Liberals are already history and Labour should be worried." That was the title of her article. She reminds readers that in a two-party system, the governing party, Labour, now with a monster majority, needs to be challenged by the opposition party.
And as we've pointed out before, a two-party system isn't enshrined in the Australian Constitution. It's really a convention based on the British Westminster tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a party and an opposition.
That's right.
And that's propped up by our mainstream media, the third leg of our lethal triangle. So I would say we need oppositions, plural, not one opposition.
That's right. With the Liberals seemingly in a lethal decline, leeching on one side to independence and on the other to One Nation.
Mm.
And given the absence of policies in their programs, there is not much of a challenge to Labour from the coalition anyway, or its splitting and its reuniting sub-parties.
Yeah, the coalition's Liberal and Nationals.
Mm, that's
yeah.
right. So from the Australia Institute's perspective, which is where the Micus works now, she wonders, and I quote her, on the things Labour does need pushing on, addressing inequality, its lockstep march with the United States, housing and so on, its slavish devotion to fossil fuels and crackdowns on liberties and speech. The Liberals are either right alongside it or cheering it on. End of quote. So really, think about that. Is that a two-party democracy for us?
Yeah, so two-party consensus, as you say, on all the important matters, it seems.
That's right. And regarding Labour's lockstep march with the US, of course, Remakers is referring to our future commitment to our military alliance with via AUKUS. And how crazy is that when we witness the US spiralling out of control, flouting international law and behaving like a bully, while not even trying to appear to be committed to principles of democracy anymore.
Yeah, operating more on the principle of might is right.
That's right. So why would we hitch ourselves to that?
Yeah, good question. And on the home front, as we know, inequality is ramping up.
And
as the system continues to uphold the interests of an elite few, and that's only being increased, really. That's correct.
So housing is just being a case in point. ACOS, the National Welfare Advocacy and not sure what
Australian Council of Social Services peak body.
That's right. They just released a report showing that, and I quote the title, Australia spends more on tax breaks for landlords than social housing, homelessness and rent assistance combined. So the report shows property investors received $12.3 billion in tax concessions in 2025, while the share of social housing dropped to a record low.
Yeah.
And then there's independent member of the House of the Parliament, Monique Ryan from Kooyong. She pointed out in a new daily article on February the 9th that the current Labour government is maintaining inequalities in our education system that were introduced by previous Labour Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
No, Liberal.
What did I say?
Labour.
Oh, shoot.
So by the Conservative side.
Sorry.
Coalition.
I stumbled.
Scott Morrison.
That's right. And let me quote Monique Ryan. The Albanese government continues to shirk action on the worst remnant of the Morrison era changes to higher education. By continuing to ignore the urgent need to undo the job-ready graduate scheme, the government is retaining a policy that harms the financial security and living standards of millions of young Australians. Some 2.9 million Australians carry, on average, more than $20,000 in HECS debts.
Yeah, and that's their debts incurred for undertaking tertiary education.
That's correct, yep.
With inequities introduced, as you say, by the coalitions. And, of course, under both main parties, our tax system continues to favour the rich.
Mm-hmm.
As one example, the capital gains tax discount gives a 50% tax deduction to property investors. Mm-hmm. An editorial in The Guardian earlier this week talks about this. So it says, on Thursday, the Parliamentary Budget Office released costings that show the capital gains tax discount will cost taxpayers $250 billion over the next decade. So as a side, that's money being channeled from workers to people who already have wealth.
That's right.
So capital gains tax discount will cost taxpayers $250 billion over the next decade, more than twice as much as the concession has cost in its 25-year history. Mm-hmm. So the beneficiaries are overwhelmingly wealthy retirees and high-income earners. The Parliamentary Budget Office figures show the top 1% of taxpayers will receive nearly 60% of the benefit this financial year. So the editorial does add up that Labor MPs have left the door open to reform in this area, which gives a small glimmer of hope, I should add.
But remembering some earlier electoral disasters when Labour announced it wanted to change the tax system to create more equality, Chambers, the finance minister, quickly hosed down expectations that the capital gains tax would be addressed. So, no, we won't. Which must lead many to ask, if Labour can't pursue economic reform with a non-existing opposition and with support in the Senate, when would it actually start doing it?
The question we're all asking.
Sora Mikis wonders, and I quote her, Labour, supposedly a centre-left party, continues to fill the centre-right and sometimes just flat-out conservative areas. And whatever the Liberal and National parties are, they still claim that it's not conservative enough. Mm-hmm. End of quote. Obviously, the lethal triangle in Australian politics.
Yeah, being Labour, the coalition, such as it is, and media.
Yes, that lethal triangle still continues to operate across most areas of political economic life. Sometimes with unspeakable human and ecological consequences, including genocide in Gaza, the ongoing extension of fossil fuels extraction and their commercialization, even without any economic benefit to the people of Australia, who presumably govern the country being a democracy.
Yeah, and as we export all the gas for nothing.
Unbelievable stuff. So for myself to gain a little bit of breath, let's listen to Rise Up by Blue King Brown. You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we talked and wondered about our political system and whether it could still be referred to as a democracy. In Tuesday's New Daily on February the 10th, the Australian Institute's co-CEO, Richard Dennis, offered some good starting points to reflect on the plausibility of Australia being a democracy.
Yeah, so especially while stuck in a questionable left-wing, right-wing binary that we try to squeeze everything into.
As reflected in the title, and that's Richard Dennis's title, Left-Right Labels Make Political Commentary Easy and Democracy Hard. Richard states the issue well. He's asking, and I quote him, is protecting freedom of speech a left-wing issue or a right-wing issue? And if you are unsure, how on earth can the press gallery or anyone else talk about what a centre-right political party stands on such a point of principle would be? While using the traditional left-right lens makes some sense for some political policy issues, for most of the big issues paralysing our federal parliament, it is the left-right frame that is causing much of the confusion and paralysis. End of quote. The media's easy labelling of most political and economic issues in that manner helps obfuscate the nature of the issues and decisions needing to be discussed.
Yeah, and addressed.
That's right. Adding to the issues we already mentioned, Dennis refers to the science wars, the climate change and windmill wars, and the vaccination wars being dealt with as if they are left or right questions.
Yeah, and as you're saying, trying to squeeze everything into that simplistic, outdated binary.
That's right. Dennis, Richard Dennis, is worth quoting here again. To be clear, there are no smart answers to some dumb questions. Things aren't any clearer when it comes to trust in the government. Most Australian commentators insist on pretending that support for government spending is left-wing, while support for smaller government is right-wing. But while such shorthand makes for tidy opinion pieces, in reality, the right loves nothing more than a nice, big, publicly funded boondoggle.
Yeah, like hundreds of billions of dollars committed to our military alliance with the US over 300, mind you.
Yeah.
And also the Nats, for a long time, arguing for public funding for various things, like wanting $10 billion for cyclone reinsurance for the Northern Territory.
That's right. So publicly funded, what the boondoggle is really, publicly funded projects which will win them their next election, which we have indeed so much seen of. I have been reading Omar El-Akkad's latest book. The title is One Day Everyone Will Have Always Been Against This. It's a text publication. So he wrote the multi-award-winning American War book, establishing him as a terrific author globally. Richard Flanagan calls his new book A Howl from the Heart of Our Age. Throughout the book, El-Akkad reveals the hypocrisy, not so much of the conservative side of politics, but of the so-called liberals or Democrats or left-wing in the US and elsewhere, including in Australia. The main issue he returns to is, of course, Gaza, but also Iraq and Afghanistan, from where he has reported as a journalist. He really, in his concluding comments or chapter, he identifies the capitalist world and its associated growth culture, not as being driven by capacity for better, creating things which become and makes things better, but its increasing tolerance for worse.
Tolerance for worse.
Yes. A tolerance, for example, for military violence, for climate change causing floods and fires and extinctions, and I quote him directly, our ever-growing tolerance for violence against the hordes of nameless others to enact its cruelest, most violent fortressing. In time, negotiation becomes all there is.
Negation
becomes all there is. To walk away from this system is to speak the only language the system will ever understand.
Yeah.
End of quote.
Yeah, and as you say, there's been that terrible scapegoating of migrants worldwide. And we've seen it here, but really playing out really horrifically in the US.
That's right. And Omar Al-Khattab suggests that the deepest reason people keep betraying their ethical stance is their fundamental self-interest, as generated and demanded by capitalism now in its presumed late stage, late capitalism, we call it. Even progressive people and their left political parties will continue to act based on their capacity to live with calamities like genocide, the obvious and intentional destruction of our environment, and vote, therefore, for the lesser evil in our supposedly democratic system.
Like Labour.
The lesser evil which still accepts the existence of these presumably unavoidable calamities, because walking away from the systems that cause them would hurt their self-interest.
Yeah, or halt their careers or impede their ability to pay the mortgage. And we've, I guess, seen that happen to a few of our friends criticising the genocidal state of Israel.
Absolutely. Al-Khattab's conclusion about our system, and I quote him, "We dismantle them now, systems, build another thing entirely, or we hurtle towards the cliff, save in the certainty that, when the time comes, we'll learn to lay tracks on air." End of quote.
So, which I would love to continue talking about, but we're coming to the end, so I'd love to continue talking about that next week with the late David Graeber's notion of prefigurative politics. So to give a taster, here's a quote from his essay titled On the Phenomenology of Giant Puppets. So put that title aside. If one talks to someone, so this is what he says. If one talks to someone fresh from a major mobilization and asks what she found most new and exciting about the experience, one is most likely to hear long descriptions of the organization of affinity groups, clusters, blockades, flying squads, spokes councils, network structures, or about the apparent miracle of consensus decision-making, in which one can see thousands of people coordinate their actions without any formal leadership structure. There is a technical term for this, prefigurative politics. Direct action is a form of resistance that in its structure is meant to prefigure the genuinely free society one wishes to create. Unquote. Thank you, David Graeber, and that's something to think about till our next program, when we'll continue talking about democracy and some possibilities. And I guess we should, for a community announcement, last week we ran out of time to talk about Footscray Community Response Action. So, and especially for people who don't aren't connected to the internet, on the Tuesday, the 17th of February, next, councillors will vote on extending the Security Patrols Program. Be at the Footscray Council meeting and make sure Footscray's community is heard. No security patrols. So 5:45 p.m. Council will vote on this from the 6:30 p.m. and that's at the Town Hall, Footscray Town Hall, I guess. Footscray. I'm not sure if it's called Footscray or Maribyrnong Town Hall, corner of Napier and Hyde Streets, 17th of February, 5:45.
Thanks for all of our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. And if you want to send us any comments about today's program or suggest topics or people to interview on the programs, please email Borderlands, borders@borderlands.org.au. And remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website on 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milky Mana by King Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.